Previously on Supergirl Gab.
Well, you see, there are these things called books.
A different take on her, but it still totally feels like Supergirl.
So she's having like these weird feelings about her powers.
Oh, and she's got the heat vision.
Puberty is not a magical time for girls.
You get to have all that heavy lifting out of the way, finally.
You didn't like some of it?
It's like when he's telling her, he's having that like flashback, this sort of like in black and white, where he's talking about, you know, he lands and then gets abducted by those people.
Oh, maybe it's in issue 4. Anyway, so we really know that he's not good news when he completely vaporizes a kindly person just checking out
a kindly person.
Like, just, hello, are you enjoying the evening? Such a lovely view. It was just coming up to see if I could catch sight of the Milky Way. And then he says, the stars are not for you, human. And then just, like,
completely blasts him into nothing.
Oh, God, it's so bad.
Well, see, I thought that at first maybe that guy was supposed to be not just a normal person. I thought that it was, like, clearly, or I thought that, like, to him it was clear that this guy was supposed to be, like, someone who's trying to act like a normal person, but then they're part of the government or whatever. That's like they're about to spring a trap on them.
Yeah. But I think
that is a pretty badass line of that. The stars aren't for you or whatever.
Yeah. And it really does imply that it's not just, I want to escape. It's, I have no respect for this or for this planet or their people. And I would kill any of them as soon as I see them. Like that's,
At this point in the story, though, I'm still like, he's not completely unjustified in hating everybody.
I do understand that, but also there's...
He shows up, I mean, if we're believing his story, it's basically like he shows up and then they've just been torturing him for years. And so at this point, you're still kind of like, oh, is he... Yeah, he's not going to be who she thinks he is, but he's not necessarily a bad guy. It's not until then the stuff he does later that you're like, okay, he's 100% just a bad guy. There's like nothing redeeming to him now.
Yeah. Also, I think you might be right. I'm looking at the flashback now, and he might actually be like, again, though, he's also Kryptonian, so who even knows about their ages?
Maybe their stuff is all completely different.
Wibbly wobbly, yeah. and I do think you make a good point that, you know, he is justified in not trusting any of them. The fact that there was someone who was not a threat and that came up to him and was pleasant and he decided
still gotta go.
Yeah, still gotta go. That just out of spite more than anything else, definitely at least implies like not a good dude, not a good guy for our Kara to see. So Dolly gets worried about Kara. And she ends up going to the coach's office and sees the documents, which happen to be just like laid down on the table.
Very convenient for the story.
Yeah, and the coach sees her, and she says "frick," and and gets captured. And then Kara tries to tell Tannon that they can trust Earth, that Earth's her. You know, the Earth's her home, and it's not they're not all bad. And he's like, no, I've seen them clearly. We have abilities beyond anything they could ever achieve alone, and they're happy to tear us apart to get to them. And she says, well, I've known Earth people all my life too, and not everyone here is like that.
Yeah.
And he's not convinced whatsoever.
Yeah, he does not care.
He's pretty sure. But then she gets a message from Dolly, basically that LexCorp is saying, yeah, it says, come to LexCorp. My life depends on it. I am typing this, but also typing what they tell me. Because she just wants to make sure Kara knows.
Well, and also it's one of those things, it's like, how is she... And they're also spelling it out for the audience before jerks like me go like, wait a minute.
A minute. Yeah, yeah. Why? Like, Kara is well aware it's a trap, but she doesn't care because it's her friend and she's not going to leave her.
Yeah, it's fine.
Which, again, I like the fact that it's set up really well so that... I mean, yes, a human life in general, like, the stakes would be high, but this friendship is so connected within the story. And
they clearly feel like they have left. Like, each other is all they have left.
Yeah, and she's already lost another friend, and like, the stakes for Kara are so high here because Dolly is one of the people that she cares about most in the whole world. So it's a really good setup, even before, like, the potential death of, like, the entire town. So it's a nice build-up here where first it's just her running into danger because she could get captured or Dolly could get hurt, and then it escalates. So she gets zapped again by evil scientist lady, and she's been put down, like, on the experiment table, and they're basically going to zap her energy because they want to be able to have renewable energy resources, and apparently ethics just go right out the window.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she does have some kind of, like, lip service to, like, this is, like, for such a greater good. Like, yeah. they're afraid to, like, fully just have her be a bad guy. They're about to turn Tannon mega bad guy.
Yeah, I think she says, is there a price? Yes, there's a sacrifice. I've made that sacrifice. Like, yeah, my ethics are basically shot now, but I've made that I've sold my soul for this because it will save people. And Kara's going like, yeah, but you killed my friend and you're a murderer and you caused the earthquake. And it doesn't matter that it's accidental. And you've been experimenting on me, and that's really messed up, basically. Yeah. She says, that's evil. That's not complicated. That's evil. Which, is, again, Kara makes a pretty valid point, too. But yeah. It's also kind of the point of a lot of LexCorp stuff. It's like, yeah, ends are not justified by... Yeah. Or means ends, not justified.
There's something off balance with these ends and means.
Means, yes, exactly. But she doesn't have time really to convince the scientists because Tannon comes and goes murder face on all of them. It's done really well because both his murdering of the person in the third issue and his little montage of death in this issue are both fairly, it's obviously there's like, it's really gruesome, but it's drawn in a way that hides a lot of the gruesomeness.
Yeah.
So it still feels like T plus, but not like anything higher than that. And yeah, there's way more implied than there is actually shown, and it's done really effectively. That's I really like the page layout in it because it's almost like a sunbeam around his head and each of the people getting attacked.
Yeah. It's like, you don't have to, like, completely show what is happening for us to know that something horrible is happening.
Yeah.
And like, you can just fill that in.
Yeah, exactly. And also, again, the showing him leaning towards just being a supervillain is he actually says, this is going to be fun. As he's just frying everyone. And then the next thing Kara says is, oh my god, you just murdered everyone. Which is such a great response. It's such a teenager response to, like, that sort of, like, it was just a great reaction. And then he just goes, yes. And now.
Sure did.
And again, and then he says, I'm going to find the power source because I'm going to destroy this precious technology and also explode everything. And she says, what about Dolly? And he says, Kara Zor-El, the time for childish games is over. To defend yourself in the honor of Krypton, you will do as I tell you. Which, again,
like, yeah,
major dick.
Yeah, this is definitely one of those things where it's like, there is no turning back for this guy now. He is Absolutely. No one can like him anymore. No one can have like have that like still like kind of lingering doubt about, yeah, he's just misguided. It's like, oh no, now you are clearly you're showing us your true colors.
Yeah, and then the next line, again, he's just so punchable. He's like, or do you truly believe you were sent here to be a good little Earth girl?
Ugh.
What a jerk.
Why was he bothering to act so nice before, if this is what he's really like?
Well, you know how nice, quote-unquote, nice guys are. How quickly they're Earth, whether they're on Earth or they're on Krypton, their true colors come out really soon. So the scientist tells Kara what where the generator is, or at least mentions that the generator needs to stay on because if he destroys it, the town will go. Kara ends up finding Dolly because he's basically taken her to the rooftop and is like, "Well, I'm gonna murder your friend because you didn't listen to me," which again. Super, super, like, nice guy TM move.
Yeah.
Where immediately...
Nice guys are always trying to kill your friends.
Yeah, exactly.
On the top of, from the tops of buildings.
Yeah, exactly. and I like that Dolly calls him an No, sorry, I just realized you're probably going to bleep that.
Yeah.
So...
The episode, like the series, is rated T for teens.
No... Well, to be fair, this book is rated T for teens too, and it still has a certain two words put together. It basically, since Chris clearly bleeped what I said, they had two different swears that she put together into one word, and it felt very teenager-y.
Yes,
that in the moment of her nearly getting killed, like about to be like tossed off a roof, that she is choosing some very creative language.
You know, that's the biggest thing that makes this comic not feel real to me, is that real teenagers would be swearing up a storm all throughout this thing.
Yeah, but it's also like there's only so much.
No, I know. I'm not saying I wanted them to do it. I'm just saying that's like one of those things where it's like, yeah, this will never sound truly like teenagers. Because teenagers swear so much.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised that... And I'm not even...
When their
I'm
parents not, aren't around. For those of you that...
I'm actually impressed that the first issue has Dolly describe herself as a dyke. Which is... I mean, it's not phrase...
That sure caught me off guard.
Yeah, it's one of those words where not everybody... Not every LGBT person is okay with it. I mean, it's the same thing with queer, and I use queer freely, but I know that other people aren't okay with it. But I liked the fact that this wasn't someone calling her that. That's her, the word that she chooses for herself, and that's what makes it work. If it was someone calling her that as a slur, that'd be a way different situation.
Yeah.
But I liked the fact that they actually were that blunt about it. I thought it worked.
I don't know. Because it's like if that had been something like with a different slur, even if it's the person saying it, you know, about themselves, you like think of some other slurs and you're like, they never would have done that.
Yeah.
And it would have felt wrong. You know, I mean, it would be like, it would have felt inappropriate in the story. Like if you think just, you know, so.
But it's also like one time. They didn't go back to it. So I didn't have.
It's kind of like that. It's kind of like that Zit Pop in the first issue also, where it's like, then they never went back to it.
Yeah, yeah.
They were trying to get all this like really weird stuff, or not weird, you know, but I mean stuff that's like weird for in that it's not going to be in the rest of the series. They wanted to like front load that first issue.
Yeah, I can maybe see that. I also feel like, again, from a writing point of view, there tends to be like a pretty... I don't know what the writing process was for this, so I don't want to imply that I know any inside information. But a lot of times there's such a big space between like the first issue and the second in terms of writing that it just could be that they kind of just shifted gears.
Yeah.
And got a little singular. I just didn't have... I totally get your points. They just didn't bother me as much. Like, even now, even thinking about it, I'm like, yeah. Like, it doesn't take the book, like, my rating for the book down, like, many notches. You know what I mean? But I can totally get why that would be a little annoying.
Well, not even annoying. It just feels like one of those things where it's like, was this necessary? Like, what point did this prove? If you're never going to, like, you know, if you're not, unless you're making some kind of statement, like, throughout, or maybe that's not fair either. I don't know.
I think maybe also it's a point where when there's a series where so much of it works really well and is really tight, the few parts that don't quite sync up.
Yeah, they way jump out at you.
Yeah, which in some ways it's like, congratulations, you have a book that is largely really, really solid.
Yeah.
I just have a couple of notes.
Yeah.
Which I think...
Well, it's also that thing, I guess, of the fact that it happened, both, you know, that happened like within the first couple pages of the first issue. And it's like, I don't know these characters yet. I don't know anything about these people. And I know they're using that to, like, really try to make, oh, here's a clear line of what this person is like. But, you know, sort of like it tells you something about them without having to, like, lay it all out. But if that had gotten used, like, later on after I've, like, gotten to know these characters more, and it felt like it kind of was not so jarring right at the start of the thing, I think it wouldn't have bothered me at all, like, way later in the book.
Yeah. I think that this book is going to benefit from being in a single volume, because it's one thing to read them, again, months in between each other, and there's another thing to basically read it as one novel and to have that flow.
Which is how I read this. I just read this all at once. I read the first issue. Yeah, I read the first issue back when it came out.
So my defense of it right there doesn't apply at all.
Yeah, sorry. Not my intention, but, I read it all. I read the first issue when it came out and then didn't read any of the others until it was done, and then read it all in one night, like just in one sitting.
Okay. But your first impression of the first issue was as its own thing though. So that still could.
Oh yeah, I guess. Well, yeah, shoot. I guess you're right.
But,
it didn't like kind of catch me off guard any less reading it all together, though.
Okay, that's fair.
I was still like, oh, right. That was in this, you know.
So Dolly gets dropped, and she's falling and falling and falling, and Kara is first held back. And again, he's like, a hard-learned lesson is a lesson nonetheless. I'm like, you're just the biggest jerk. Yeah. You're such a jerk.
Just getting jerkier by the second,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, really. There's no time for this. The fate of our people is in my hands. And I think at this point, he might have mentioned the idea that Krypton is still around, and she just didn't remember. I can't remember if that was really clear, but here is where at least I remember reading and going, wait a second. Our people, he doesn't know. And Kara doesn't know at the moment either, because her memories are still kind of locked away. But she elbows him in the face, which is very satisfying. There is a great thack noise, which is a pretty good sound effect for it. And as someone who has had to start making up her own sound effects and finding that they are the hardest thing, they are like the thing I loathe about writing comics, to the point where I'm telling my editor, I'm like, JD, will you please figure out a sound effects for this, because I can't think of anything. So Kara saves Dolly, and there's kind of a cute part where Kara's holding her in like a bridal hold, and she goes, that's what it feels like to be a damsel in distress, worst job ever. Which I guess it's a little silly considering that, like, she almost died, but again,
yeah, you,
like,
would not be making jokes at that point. You would still be like, your adrenaline,
like,
would be kicking
it
so
needed,
hard.
It needed another beat of her, like, of her just, like, recognizing that they're on the floor. I just don't think that they had
I think you need, like, a good hour to stop screaming after something like that. And it's one thing when, like, Lois Lane is quippy after something like that, because you're like, yeah, she does this all the time. You know, or Catwoman, or somebody where it's like, she's a superhero. Yeah, this is not a crazy thing to her. But, like, that, you would, I mean, unless you were just, like, amazingly well-adjusted to any kind of outside traumas and crazy things happening, That seems like the kind of thing that you would just be like, I might never recover from that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just thinking that they've gone through so much weird stuff that the humor kicking in as an emotional defense mechanism.
I mean, it's fine. See, this is the thing I'm talking about, though. This is where it's like in like a Spider-Man comic, if this happens, you'd be like, yeah, okay, that's fine.
Well, in a Spider-Man comic, she would have died.
Yeah, or if this happened, you know, in whatever, in something that's not trying to be...
I just wanted to point out, though, that, like, when I saw her drop, I mean, I knew that she was, I was pretty sure she was going to be okay, but I was thinking, like, in another comic, they would have pulled the Gwen Stacy on us and really annoyed me.
Yeah, but just if there was something where, like, if this was in, like, a regular, like, everybody, you know, a Justice League comic or something where there's tons of characters in costumes, if the lead's friend gets dropped, like... and then is quipping about it a second later, you're like, yeah, that's fine. But in something like this where, you know, as we previously discussed, it's like they are trying to sort of do like a more grounded, sort of a little bit more quote unquote real world type of thing with the way that, you know, people are trying to act more like real people and the way it's written and drawn and all of that. So then when you have someone do something like that, that would be just like, would take such an emotional and physical toll on you to go through something like that. You would not just be immediately, and that it's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm getting like way too hung up on it.
A little bit. Also, there is a part where she says, hey, so you're totally a superhero. So I guess superheroes were a thing.
I think it's in issue 3, or maybe it's not until the end of issue 4.
So I think
that part with the newspaper or whatever that she shows her.
Maybe there. I think there might be a part 2 where we see the Flash on a bowl or a box of cereals that's supposed to be clearly.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm wondering if maybe like the Flash and a few other people are already superheroes. I still think that with the flashback with her grandparents, she was young enough that maybe they just had it popped up.
There's no such thing as superheroes yet.
At that point, like maybe it happened a few years later. So I feel like my theory still stands. I do like when she's rushing off to try to stop Tannon.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, also we're reading this, so I can say it however I want.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But, I mean, I just think
I know how Krypton's usually. Yeah.
Yeah. It's Jor-El.
Usually. Yeah. Tannon.
Yeah.
But when she's flying, she's saying like, you know, I'm going to stop Tannon from blowing up Midvale. Crap, I have no idea how to do that. And I really like that moment. So he's flying or like just lasering, trying to blow up the whole building. He calls her a traitor and she says that he's going to have to get through her first. And he starts really beating up on her and she thinks that she can't do it and that
then
she's
failing.
Then
what does Obi-Wan say?
Or like, yeah, I know, I'm failing you, aren't I? And then she suddenly remembers the part of the dream that she doesn't remember, that she never could quite remember.
Handy and that she remembered it right now in this important moment.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it's a trope. But at the same time, I mean, we don't know her dad as much on the TV show, but we got to know her mom and there was something pretty moving about the speech that her parents give her. The fact that you will be strong, you will be brave, you will do good above all else, you will live. And that she will be the shining star to emerge from their planet, that there's hope for her on Earth, and that they believe in her. And it's really, like, it's really sweet, and that she remembers but that then she realizes that the reason why they sent was because she was the last one.
Yeah.
She was the last one to go.
Also, I just realized we have not talked about the fact that speaking of her mom on the show, the news that she is going to have a new mom on the show next season.
And it's once again pulling from the super family DC canon.
Yeah, has formerly been in a super family show. Erica Durance, possibly my favorite Wonder Woman. Not Wonder Woman, I mean Lois Lane. I'll cut that out. I'll make it sound like I did not mess that up.
Yeah, do it again.
Erica Durance, I almost did it again. almost did it again. All I can think of is that episode where she was dressed up like Wonder Woman, but it was not where it was like a cool take on Wonder Woman, sort of looked more like Xena. But they couldn't call her
Wonder
Woman.
Have I mentioned
Woman.
I still have not seen that show?
No, no, I know. I feel like that's eventually that's where we might start dipping our toes into.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so you want to try this one more
no,
time?
No, no, it's fine. Now it'll totally all get left in.
Okay, cool. That's fine. but yeah, it's an interesting choice. I mean, it's always kind of bites when an actress has to be replaced for stuff like this. I think because she's a Broadway star and she's too busy, which I totally understand. It also makes sense why she was barely in. She was in like two episodes at the beginning of the season and then completely cut out.
Well, and we thought that it was just like they had forgotten about it or something, and it's like, oh, maybe we didn't give them enough credit for it's like, no, we haven't forgotten about it. We just have to, our person is gone and we don't have anybody, we don't have a new, we don't have a member from someone from one of the other super shows free.
I'm wondering if they really thought that maybe they could get her back later and they were holding off for replacing her, which was totally fair because I'm sure that they really liked working with her and it was part of respecting her as her performance and stuff. And then they realized, okay, yeah, we're going to have to, the schedule's not going to work, which is, you know, it happens. It's interesting because, is it Durant? Who's
Durant.
I completely forgot before to look it up, but it's, I think that there might be a big age difference between who played her mom before and now.
Oh yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's going to be a very interesting. It's going to be very interesting to see like sort of how the character shifts because they seem like two very different actors. I mean, and not like either of them couldn't pull off trying to, you know, act like the other, but she just seems like a very different kind of energy or something, you know, like,
yeah, I'm wondering if
and she seems a lot younger.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that means that they're going to try, they specifically chose her because they want to do more flashbacks and then having
her
be, especially because since we know that the villain is a Kryptonian sent, at least at the beginning, the least big bad for, it better not be like just the first episode. I'm assuming it's for the first arc of the season, but was sent from Krypton. Then it has more reason for them to do flashbacks from Krypton. Yeah. So, but yeah, so I'm intrigued. I still want to see actual Lois, the person, the character on the show at some point. But I can be patient for that. I think it's going to come at some point. And I'm sure it's going to be an episode where they can actually, where they can get Calista back so that she can.
Oh, so they can have like a whole thing. But see, if they do that, that means they're going to have to get like a real star to like somehow, you know, go against her.
Now I can't think of the actress. Did you ever watch Parks and Rec?
Oh, of course.
Okay. I like how you say that, but you never know. Like, it could be the
I feel like my... you can't be the kind of nerdy that, you know, that we are and not watch Parks and Rec.
But the actress who played Tom's wife towards the end, the one who, like, they were dating and then they got back together toward, like, in the last season.
Yeah, yeah.
She's super cool. Like I love her energy and I've seen her in other stuff and
man,
I feel
what is
like
her name?
She would be, I know it's driving me crazy. I just read a piece from her, because, she actually, she came out as queer, during Pride Month. So like, I was just reading about her. I mean, I had her as my, like, if I could cast the show pick anyway, but then I was like, oh, added incentive. Hire
man,
her.
I can see her face so clearly.
Yeah,
but I can't think of her name.
I just think she'd be. She's younger than Calista, but I think that she'd be really. She'd be really fun.
Well,
and
she
also,
should
I think
be.
She's around. Yeah,
I mean, this is clearly. I mean, we're dealing with a much younger Clark, and you know, also Kat is supposed to be much more established. You know.
Yeah.
She has been where they are.
Yeah, but I think she could totally hold her own against Calista. Like their back and forth would be really fun. And I would love to, and I just feel like she would bring a really cool energy to Lois. But yeah, so we'll see. So anyway, so we're back to her fighting. Her fighting.
Sorry, I was just, now
Tandem.
I'm thinking about like other people on Parks and Rec and like who they could be on Supergirl universe.
Well, the MCU is slowly collecting community members, so
yeah.
So it will. You never know.
Yeah, I guess not. But so, I'm just like, I'm going to be thinking about this all night now and like trying to like see who could fit where.
Next
who could
episode.
Be who.
Next episode.
okay.
So Kara tells, she's still fighting him. It's very intense. Actually, there's a panel where like they're going so fast that like their bodies are almost shaking. Like it's almost blurry, which is kind of a cool effect. I think that might be a coloring choice because it's almost like shading, but it's a really cool choice. And she tells him that Krypton's gone, and he thinks that it's a trick and a lie. And she goes, "I'm not lying." And he goes, "Why? What do you know about the truth? Until yesterday, you knew nothing." And she says, "No, I remember. I remember my parents saying goodbye." And she heartfeltly tells him Krypton's gone. And he does not believe it, but he runs away, or he crashes towards the building, and Kara has to use her ice breath that I don't think she used before. She's just discovering all the powers.
Yeah, it's like it's all these high stress situations are what's bringing it out.
Yeah. Yeah, she says, "Did you even know you could do that ice blow thing?" And she says, "Sort of." So... so she's able to stop the building from exploding, and a helicopter goes after them, but they're able to run away, and Dolly encourages her, like, "Well, you're a superhero now." She's like, "Well, not really. I'm an alien from a planet that's no longer a planet, and my powers are just metabolism plus the sun." And Dolly's like, "No, I'm pretty sure that still makes you a superhero. Like, you have powers." It's...
Yeah.
And then, you know, you just, now you've frozen breath the whole evil laboratory and saved a bunch of people and killed the bad guys, so... And then Dolly shows her a super interesting video. is it a video or is it a...
It's got to be a video. I said newspaper earlier, but I was like, that's so ridiculous. It wouldn't be a newspaper.
Or like a blog post. But I was thinking, yeah. I couldn't tell if it was a video or if it was just like a blurry picture. But yeah,
it's clearly Superman.
Yeah, clearly Superman. And I like that she says, you know, yeah, he's been spotted in Metropolis a bunch, or calling him Superman. And Dolly says, "Feels like there's maybe a family resemblance, right?" It's like, it's a very blurry, I mean, I know it's a joke, but it was still like, that's a very blurry picture.
Yeah, it's like there's nothing to put the two of these together from. Unless you're just going like, "Hey, he can fly, you can fly."
Yeah, no, I think she's clearly being sarcastic, but... Yeah. But
that's also kind of like that line in Supergirl the movie where she's like, "You know, I think I recognize the outfit."
I know, and I still think that's a sarcasm thing. I know you think that it was played serious, but
no,
I can
read it both. I can see it both ways. I mean, I thought she was saying it like seriously, but like this is so obvious that it's commenting on it like this because obviously. Okay, wait, but all right, so listen to this. So you have Rob Lowe as Bruce Wayne. But then you have Nick Offerman as Batman.
With the mustache? Can we keep
the
mustache?
The whole thing. But he's just in that outfit, and it's like with that stern voice. Really makes you feel like there's no way they'd put the two of them together. That's like that Bruce Wayne was Batman.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
This is very good casting I'm doing.
Yeah, clearly. Perfect casting. So, so Kara ends up saying goodbye to her friend's grave. And there's she basically says that, like, her parents know that she's on the run now, and that they're just going to, they're going to handle it, they're going to figure it out. She then says, "Dad's worried I'm going to get a credit card," as if that was the thing.
Yeah, that's the big problem.
Well, that's the thing, like, her dad is very, speaking of Parks and Rec, her dad's very Ron Swanson they keep joking about him burying gold and not trusting.
That's what I felt
government.
Like he was, when you were talking about what they were like earlier, I started to say that it's like, he felt very much like he was based off Ron Swanson.
Yeah, yeah, dad's worried when he get a credit card, and he said, did he give you some of his gold? So Dolly hugs her and says, like, I'm gonna be thinking about you, like, you know, you be okay, you be safe. And then Dolly is the one who names her Supergirl, but then says, shoot, did I say that to her already? Well, that's totally it, that her name's Supergirl. And then you get to see again, I think this is if we want to do another series for this, this is clearly setting it up, that, like, one of the last pages is the reveal that Lex is all over this and totally knows, and that Subject 1 is no longer in Midvale, and Subject 2, they're looking for, who is clearly... I can't actually tell which one's which.
I think earlier in the, like, in one of the, like, other, like, earlier issues, there was a part where you knew they were talking about her and they were calling her Subject 2. And
right,
I thought
right.
Tannon is Subject 1. But,
I think it might be the other way around, but she said, yeah, the father is threatening to call the media, so they're backing off the investigation for now.
Yeah.
And so they decide that the priority, I think that do you have any trace of Subject 2? No. And I think that they mean Tannon, because Kara is safe for now.
Maybe they have no idea Superman is Kryptonian yet.
Or they just, like, it's just not as big of a problem as the two that they saw at Midvale, who kind of know that something shady is going down. So Kara's at a diner in Metropolis, but we get to see a cut really quick to a girl from their class asking out Dolly, who we only see, like, a couple times, but she does talk to Dolly a little bit, so there is some setup for that. And just knowing that, like, Dolly's not completely alone, she's going to get a cute purple-haired girlfriend.
Yeah.
And the parents move the ship, and they know that she's safe, and Tannon is still alive and a piece of trash.
I don't know if I remember at all if I remember him still being alive.
Yeah, he is. They said that they didn't kill him, and that's why they said that's why when Luther says, do you have trace on Subject 2, they mean Tannon.
Okay.
No, I don't think they mean Clark. I think Kara mentions when Dolly says you killed the bad guy, and Kara says, I don't think I killed him.
It's funny that there's, like, all this other stuff is, like, so crisp in my mind, but then, like, how the big fight ends is, like, so unimportant to the story to me.
It's pretty, I think, honestly, like, the focus is all on her saving the town.
Yeah, it's, like, not at all about the, you know, the action,
like,
stuff. It's,
yeah, the
all
catharsis,
clearly just about the characters.
Which I think is a good choice. And the fact that, like, and then it's like, oh, we gotta leave because there's a helicopter. And then her realizing, yeah, I don't think he's gone.
Yeah.
But yeah, you see him flying away, looking mad at an entire planet. and then she has the last bit of narration, but they hear their people are looking at the window and saying, it's Superman. What's that about? How am I supposed to know? And she's running, and she's putting on the blanket that she was wrapped in, and then the last shot...
You don't wrap kids up in blankets, though, do you? I thought it was like it's not like she's in there like a baby.
No, but she was
anyway,
still like...
Anyway, that doesn't
she was
matter.
Still, anyway, the point is, I honestly got chills on this last page where a bewildered Clark, a mid-flight Clark, sees a teenage girl in regular, like, clothes and a cape going, hey, can I talk to you for a second?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that if they're still in this world where it's, like, really early on in the sort of lifespan of superheroes, or the dawn of superheroics, you know, I'm sure that was he's not used to seeing that kind of stuff yet.
Well, and the red cape was a giveaway,
yeah,
too.
Especially if they're keeping to that kind of origin for him, too, where it's like, oh, this is... The thing that most took me out of it, out of that moment in that, is the fact that that pose and look of Superman in that is, like, basically straight up traced from a cover that Gary Frank did for Superman.
Really?
Yeah. And which would be fine if there had been, like, some kind of... It's fine. You know, when people do that stuff on covers, it's, you know, like, clearly an homage, and they usually put, you know, next to their name, they'll put, like, you know, after... whoever or whatever, you know, after Gary Frank or after Jim Lee or whatever, when they're doing one of those obvious homage covers. But this was like just weird to have like a picture of Superman that was clearly taken from another cover. And then, but it's just sort of like part of your image. It's not like your whole image is recreating, you know, a famous scene or cover or something. It just felt really weird.
I had no context for that, so that's weird.
If I put them up side by side in the show notes, which maybe I will, it's like so obvious. Because like when I just to make sure I wasn't crazy, when I was in the comic shop this week, I opened up to that page and showed it to my friend who I was there with. And I was like, you recognize that, right? And he was like, he said, yeah. And then like we, you know, looked up, we got the cover to that other comic and had them like right side by side. And we're just like, yeah. And it's weird that there's no like, it felt really out of place to suddenly have like a, you know, have someone like just basically straight up copy an image, but not for, I don't know. I don't know what the reasoning was for that. I can't think of what the reasoning would be for that.
Yeah, weird.
It's very weird.
I still like the page a lot.
Yeah, it's a cool page, but it just seems like such an odd... I mean, and also because, like, Joelle Jones's style doesn't at all seem like Gary Frank's style, you know, like, in a good way. You know, it's cool for people to draw and, you know, have totally different flavors. And then to see this where it's just like... It was just like super obvious to me. And then especially like then holding them like right up next to each other. And it's just like, man, bizarre. But it's not like a famous enough Superman cover to where you'd go like, oh, they're clearly recreating like that classic pose. So it's just, I can't conceive of a reason for it.
Huh.
You know?
Weird.
Yes, it was very weird.
I don't know what else to say. I still, like I said, from a final moment sort of thing, especially
it's a great
little
page.
Here we go. Yeah, I really like the page, and I really like the way that that they ended it. And again, it really drives home just the idea that it's an interesting. It's not that far off from Supergirl. It's not like in Bombshells where she crash lands in Russia. And she becomes a propaganda for the Russians in World War II. Right. So, spoilers, that's what happens to Bombshells for Kara's character. So it's not like a hugely drastically different take on her, but it's so interesting to see a Kara who has no concept of Superman starting off.
Yeah.
And obviously, as we talked about, like, who is an Earth girl who's like Clark in that he is that his frame of reference is being from Earth and being an Earthling.
Yeah. There's a really cool bit in the New 52 Supergirl series. Like when it first starts, you know, she's getting sent to Earth and she arrives. But of course, she thinks that it's that thing where something happens where it, you know, she thinks she's just left, but she's been gone a long time. So the last time she had seen Cal as a baby, and now she gets to Earth and he's a grown up. But she's also like probably older than this. She's probably like 16, 17, 18. But she lands in Russia or somewhere somewhere hostile to just something suddenly landing. They don't send scientists, you know, they send the military.
Yeah.
And then when she meets, you know, of course, so the first interaction she has on Earth is people trying to shoot at her and stuff. And then when Superman shows up, because there's some woman in an outfit that looks like his, you know, tearing through the military in Russia or wherever, you know, and she shows up and she's just, you know, she doesn't know what's going on. And but she recognizes his outfit, but doesn't know who he is. And thinks he's a liar because he says what his name is. And also, he's trying to speak Kryptonian to her. And she's like, you know, you sound like someone who learned Kryptonian from a book. Or she thinks that later. She doesn't say that to him or whatever. But just that whole thing of like, wow, they are definitely, you know, they're set up not in this, but in basically all the other interpretations is they have such a different starting point for Earth that it like really has a big effect on their characters.
Yeah, I think in Rebirth 2, there's a part where Clark actually asks her, or like he tries to do more Kryptonian, and she has to correct him on certain like phrasing and stuff.
Yeah.
And we see that too with, I mean, even with the Supergirl show, when Clark has been there, he's asked kind of shyly if she would talk to him about their culture and planet, and because he wants to learn more, which we've talked about this so many times, but I still I love those scenes between the two of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I really like also about this book that it takes its time to set up the world stuff with this, because for the first issue you're going like, so what's going on with Superman? Like, is he around? Is he not? Like, does she have any context for her powers at all? Is, like, what's going on? Does Clark even exist in this universe with something that was something that I really wondered?
I wonder if it was going to be one of those things where they're just like, no, she's her own thing.
You know, but I like the idea of her ending this with, I know the context of my history now, and I know that I have family. I have like blood family here, and so now this is the next step. I don't feel like it diminishes her meeting Clark. Doesn't for me diminish the story whatsoever.
Totally.
You know, and I know that's not what you were saying, but like if the point was being made, I was like, I don't think so. And again, like, I think the fact that he only shows up, I mean, I think maybe there's a mention of something with Metropolis early, but it's very, very vague and like, and she's not even paying attention to it. The fact that he only really gets brought up at the very end of the last issue.
So he's never like overshadowing her, and you never think he's just going to like show up and end up beating up Tannon for her.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's very little context for her for that, to the point where she doesn't... I mean, I think it's also really interesting that they don't even think that she's an alien. Like, the idea of her being an alien isn't even a, like, concept that... Which is so different from
Clark's
story. Because they just, like, they see it crash. And here they just think, like, maybe she was experimented on. Or maybe, like, she is some... I mean, like, I think... At some point, they must figure out that she must have some kind of superpowers from other way, you know, so, which again makes the like some of the weird body stuff she goes through, both the zit, but also like the powers failing, like that much scarier because she has no context.
Yeah,
she doesn't know that her powers necessarily come from the sun. She doesn't know any of that, so she doesn't even know what's it. It makes. It's something that I'm literally realizing as I'm talking about it. So it's making like her frustrations with her powers failing that much more emotional because she just has no clue. Like she has no clue how they exist at all until she meets another Kryptonian. So. Yeah, I mean, like, it's a really interesting take. Well, because we've been talking about this for so long. It's a really interesting take on, like a Supergirl who just has no... Who has no information about herself.
Just like a clean slate on all of the sort of continuity that is part of her baggage.
Yeah.
Which is a great way to approach it, you know? This is, like, a really cool way. And because they still get all that stuff in. It's just you don't have to start off knowing it.
Yeah.
And the way that they do it, for those of us who do already know it, they introduce it all in a way that I think still works great, where it's not just like boring to you, where you're like, come on, get to it. Like, we know she's...
I do think in terms of reading it, month to month, I did think that 2 and 3 were a little slower just because so much of it was,
I mean, see that.
And I get it because it was about like, if they had sped through her mourning process, it would have seemed cheap or stilted. Like I get it. They needed to have time, but it did feel like they like one set up so much and was so quick to like set up things happening. And then 2 and 3, I don't even think that the pace... I don't know if I would have even changed the pacing or, like, there was a way to quintessentially change the pacing for the better. But I did notice that, like, it does slow down a little bit compared... But that being said, I've definitely read miniseries that have way worse balance in terms of pacing and how they condense things and how they spread things out.
This really, I will say, I think I can definitely verify that this reads much better in one sitting. And reading it like you're watching, imagining this sort of as a movie as opposed to a TV show. This like really... And it's funny, like before we started the episode, I was thinking about this and I was really thinking that I didn't quite like it as much as like talking about it has made me go like, oh, they did do this right. I did like this. You know, I think I was maybe before we started talking about it, I was a little more focused on the things that stuck out to me that like bothered me. But as we've talked about it and kind of like really gone over like the good stuff in it, it's like it's made me just kind of appreciate all the good stuff a little more, which is great. I love when, that's a great, you clearly going into this, you know, we're upfront about liking it. But you know, it's also one of those things where it's like, sometimes you don't really know how you feel about something until you get to, you know, really thinking about it and talking about it. And which is why doing these shows is so much fun for me.
Yeah, it is for me too. And I think also it's nice because, again, I feel like for its flaws, and I think you make some really good points about some of the issue, like the very pinpoint issues here and there.
And obviously a bunch of that stuff is going to, you know, that's a matter of personal preference.
Yeah. And then, but also like a lot of it just shines out because so much of it is good. So that when, again, we've talked about like tonally, when something seems a little off, it's just it shines out more because we see everything else fit together more. But we also, I think it's worth saying that we also, as we said, we have an abundance of Supergirl content. We have the DC superhero girls in both like shorts and the movies and the graphic novels and the kids like non graphic novels. And then we have.
Are you thinking Supergirl. Of books? Is that what you're? Is that well, the words you were looking
say,
for?
I always say prose novels, and then like people look at me like, "What the heck are prose novels?" I'm like, regular novels, but I don't want to like discount graphic.
They're not
novels.
Graphic novels.
Yeah,
they're prose novels.
They're prose novels. But we have like all that content for like really little kids, and then we have the Supergirl comic that's connected to Rebirth and very distinctly tied into like the main canon. And then we have the Supergirl show, and then we have I feel like there's like one more thing that I'm probably forgetting. We have like the recent comic that was tied to the actual TV show, and then we have Supergirl being super, and we have Bombshells too, and then we also have and she's going to show up on that Motor City Girls, where she's actually going to be. It's like, what if the Gordons adopted her instead of the Danvers? That's like apparently their main thing. So she and Barbara are gonna be
for what is this on what's for, the name of it?
It's like Goth. It's like Gotham.
Gotham City Garage.
Yeah.
Oh, you said Motor City Girls, and I was like, what is that?
It's Garage.
Gotham garage City Garage.
I think Garage is the first word because I keep thinking Motor. Because I keep thinking, the Image book from the old Batgirl team. There are too many things that are like.
No, it's called Gotham City Garage. I'm looking at a thing from.
Oh, okay, you're looking at an official. Yeah. Okay, I kept thinking it was like Motor City Gotham something. Motor, because I was thinking of Motor Crush, which is done by the old Batgirl team, and is also about badass women on bikes. So like in my brain, I kept messing that up this week. so we have that, and she's Kara's gonna be, it's gonna be an AU where Kara is actually Babs's adopted sister.
But see, the thing that bothers me about that is I saw that statue they did for it, that they've already like the comic isn't even out yet and they've already got like the statues and stuff, which is fine because the stuff all looks cool.
I mean, that's what they did with Bombshells too. Yeah. They had all the statues before
which
bombs.
Is totally fine. Yeah. I was just, it's like, it's funny, like, it feels a little put in the cart before the horse, but it's, hey, it's not my money. If they think it's going to do well, then awesome.
Yeah, exactly. I think that they're going, like, Bombshells makes them a lot of money, so let's do that again.
Let's do that with something a little
and I'm
different.
Like, but this kind of ties into my point that even though Supergirl being super, I totally get, like, either whether it's your just personal preference or actual, like, things that probably could have been improved on it, we have all these. This is not the only Supergirl story we're getting, and it feels amazing to have so many, like, to, and not just her, too. Like, Wonder Woman has had, like, a bunch of comics lately. Like, there was one where her origin has her way more selfish, and, like, that being, and her learning a lesson about selflessness being the driving force of her going to Man's World. That was, I think it was, like, Wonder Woman, the True Amazon.
The one by Jill Thompson?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, again, it, like, if that was the only, it was an interesting take. I didn't, like, it wasn't, like, my favorite thing, but it was an interesting take. And if it was, like, the only comic, if it was, like, the quintessential canon for Wonder Woman out right now, then maybe I would not, I'd be like, oh, well, that's something. But because there's so many different, because they're allowing these characters to have so many different versions of the story, it's like, oh, well, this is just a take. And it's nice with Supergirl being super that it's so distinct from anything else that they're doing with Supergirl, and that they're allowing creators to really play around. And again, in a way that despite, like, a few panels here and there are largely not, like, weird eye candy, male gazy stuff for the character.
Yeah.
It just feels like DC is doing some really interesting things and is starting to, again, like, play into the readership that they kind of ignored for a long time.
Yeah.
So,
I was just going to say, it's like, it's awesome. It's like, you know, they've done like a million of these different takes on Batman. And it's like,
great
to finally see. It's like, hey, you've got some other characters that you could stand to do some, you know, to do some interesting things with besides Batman.
Yeah, and it's just really cool to see good stories coming out for these characters. So
yeah, the only thing I was going to say about that Gotham City garage was, how does Supergirl have tattoos?
how does Clark shave? Is it the mirror?
No, yeah, he does the thing with the mirror, you can do with the mirror and the heat vision or whatever. But it's like, how is Supergirl going to get tattoos? Like, I just, also to say nothing of the fact that it's like, boy, you want to talk about identifying characteristics. If she's in that Supergirl suit and you can so clearly see those tattoos, it's not going to take long for people to figure that out.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, that's a good point.
Maybe there'll be an explanation once it comes out. I'm just saying that based on a statue. So
yeah,
maybe.
she is supposed to be Kryptonian, because they mention in the press release that, like, she's the, like, main alien powered. So I don't know. We'll have to see.
We'll get to that when it comes out, I guess.
We will apparently do that. Yeah. So I still highly recommend this book. And as we said at the beginning, I believe it's coming out within the next month. In volume. You can clearly get the 4 issues on its own if you want, but I think the trade's going to be really lovely. And just in general, like, I'm super pumped. I know Joelle Jones was one of the creators that did the DC art, I don't want to say class, but, like, the program that they have. So they're definitely pulling her in to do more work for them. So
yeah, she's. They just announced today that she's going to be doing a run on Batman with Tom King.
I completely missed that. See, I completely missed this. This is what I get for having a day job when when an important convention is coming out, because I completely missed that. But that's amazing. She's going to do great. That's a really good pick, especially because we can see she does really good action. Like her paneling for the fight scenes was really good. So I'm excited to see what her Gotham City is like. Yeah, when I met her at C2E2, and I mostly just gushed about the book for like a minute. So I was just like, I just really like it, and I love all the covers you've done, and there's so many great panels, and like your car is drawn so pretty, and like they look like teenage girls, and it's just the best book, and I keep recommending it to people. And then she's like, oh, thank you, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna run away now. So yeah, I like I said, highly recommend. In terms of age group, I think we said it's maybe not quite for younger. I still feel like solidly like 13, 14 and up is pretty good for this one. And I feel like
there might be a few conversations in there, maybe depending on what people's, I don't know. I mean, which is, you know, not good or bad, or I mean, hopefully conversation is always good with that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Help people understand stuff, young people.
Yeah.
Little people.
But, little people. But yeah, so that's how I feel about it. It's still a pretty solid thumbs up for me. And I'm very excited. I'm very glad it exists.
Yeah, but no, I would totally agree. I think this is definitely a thumbs up worth checking out. And I'm very glad that it exists. Why don't you tell them where all they can find you? What do you want to plug?
Oh, boy.
That's a perfect setup. I don't know what you're talking about.
So, Katie, do you want to participate in some shameless promotion tonight? Boy, howdy do I. So you can find me on Twitter at Just Plain Tweets. I'm trying to think of the order I want to go in. All right, I have a comic out right now called Moonlighters college kids
guarantee that all of the dialogue in it is the kind of dialogue that will not make you cringe, even though you are not the same you're not the same age as the people. This is your
apparently I'm not a good judge of it because I didn't have a problem with the book, so you're gonna have to tell me, I guess, Chris.
I can't make guarantees for your book. I'm saying you can give them a guarantee based on
I write the youth perfectly good.
Oh, no.
Hey, so issue 3 is actually out, I think this is actually, because we split up our last podcast into so many parts, I think we recorded it before some special news. Moonlighters is actually going to be a part of Halloween Comic Fest, which is done by the same people who do Free Comic Book Day. It's a
is going to be a huge, huge deal for you because it's going to be in so many happy little chocolate-covered hands.
Oh my gosh, yeah. It's being printed before like the main volume, so I'm going to actually have it in my hands a lot earlier than I expected. I'm super excited. It's like, I think they said it's almost 2,000 shops across the country. So, wow. I mean, if one person comes to each of those events, that's at least 2,000 people who could get my book. And if I think about the math larger than that, I start to get a little nervous. So that's something. I will keep plugging this every time until Halloween. So look forward to that. But yeah, it's similar to Free Comic Book Day, except that it's right before Halloween and a lot of people like to dress up and do kind of a trick or treating sort of thing. And, for the next like 5 or 4 days, I think once we put this up, it'll probably be like 4 or 3, you can actually do pre-order what they're calling a polypack. So like, if you want to order multiple copies of it, it's like $5 for 25 copies. And then you can, the idea is that you can pass them out during Halloween. So if you want to do that, go to your friendly neighborhood local comic shop and have them pre-order the Moonlighters Poly Pack. If not, you can get it for free on Halloween, and I will totally not judge you. I just want people to look at the book. And you can, like I said, issue 3 is going to be out next week, and you can get that on Amazon or Comixology. Besides that, I don't know, Patreon is patreon.com/justplainsomething, katieschenkel.com, I don't know, I have a video series called Driving Home the Movie you can find on YouTube as well. We did Spider-Man, and I'm just realizing I don't think we ever actually put it online, so I actually have to, we have to do that at some point.
Gotta get to work.
I've been on a deadline, and I've completely spaced that, and I just realized that, like, in the last 5 seconds. So, yeah. So, Chris, what do you have to plug? What do you have to shamelessly self-promote tonight?
There's a bunch of other shows on the... if you're subscribed to this, you're subscribed to some of the other shows, I guess. I do a bunch of other podcasts you can listen to at keepitclosetome.com. You can subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts, and that would be great. That's a fun thing. I think that much like this show used to be a thing that Katie and I did at Comics Alliance, there's about to be a new show for the same thing.
What could it possibly be? I'm sure I'm about to be very surprised by by what it could possibly be.
The other one being the me and Emma Lawson talking about Arrow. I started to call it Green Arrow, and I was like,
sorry,
no.
No, you have to understand. I find it hilarious that you had to think about what it was.
I was after like, I built that up. What did they call that show? Yeah. Yeah, you kind of psyched me out on it. I was like, gosh, I hope she's not thinking about something else, because then it's going to be really embarrassing.
Anyway, no, I knew exactly what it was, because what else could it possibly be? You did two recap shows. What else could it be?
So, anyway, yeah, hopefully,
do you have a title? Do you have a name yet? Or?
No, we haven't gotten to that part of it yet. I think we're just trying to hammer out the details on how we're going to handle it. So you got that to look forward to. There's also several new episodes of my main show, Keep It Close to Me, on there. So check that stuff out. And if you enjoy Supergirl Gab, leave us a review on iTunes, just saying that you enjoy it. 5 stars, all that kind of stuff. It's good for the show. I've got a Patreon that supports all of these things at patreon.com/thechrishaley. You can follow me on Twitter at thechrishaley and on Instagram at thechrishaley and all of the other things. Follow the show on Twitter at KICTM Podcast. And if you've got any questions or Supergirl related things you want to send to us, put them in the subject line, say Supergirl Gab, and then email those to keepitclosetomepodcast@gmail.com. I think that is just about everything that I should tell people about.
You sure you don't want to stretch out the podcast a little longer?
We could go for 3 hours, I guess, if we want to really.
I mean, we could completely put in the Parks and Rec cast into...
All right, well, so here's the deal. I think that... I think that you really start running into the stuff where you're like, okay, so if Ron is going to be Batman, who's going to be Robin? And so it's like, and you can go one of two ways with it. You can either have, you know, Tom, a.k.a. Aziz Ansari, or you could do Andy, a.k.a. Chris Pratt.
Or Aubrey Plaza.
Well, see, no, but I wanted her to be Catwoman.
Yeah, but she's clearly like Ron's... like second in command.
Oh yeah,
like,
I was thinking about her more.
She could be like a Carrie Kelly, like just dye her hair red, put the glasses on, perfect.
Yeah.
Carrie Kelly.
Oh my gosh, that would be totally awesome. Now that you say that.
All right, we're going down a rabbit hole that we will not be able to climb out of. I think it's time to say goodbye.
All right. Thank you all so much for listening. This has been another fun episode, and I hope you have as much fun listening to it as we do. Talking about it until the late at night times. So I think that's all I got. Katie?
I'm good, yeah. I'll see you guys later. Bye!
Bye!
Bye! You know what? I've had, like... So I was on two different guests... I was on two different like guests or you know podcasts with guests, and both times just ridiculous. And I'm like, I'm starting to think it's me. I'm starting to think that I just have really long podcasts because like
it
for
may
one
be
of
you.
A, I think it might be me. And like we have really good conversations, but I'm like, all right, this is starting to become a trend, and I feel a little bad about it. But yeah.
Well, the next one we will, I think if we do this next one the way that I'm wanting to do, we will have no problem with getting it sort of, you know, into like a nice, normal podcast length.
You say that.
Well, we'll see.